Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest in the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today I have Virginia Lacayo on the line, and she's co-founder and CEO over at Massive Systemic Change. Virginia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure to be here.
First off, Virginia, I love the name of that company, Massive Systemic Change. Like, who came up with that one?
It's pretty ambitious, I know, but that is kind of it's the culmination of a path of 30 years working on social change issues and systemic change. So I'm convinced that we got to the point in society that doing good things within the system is not longer enough. We need to change the system. And that's why we talk about massive systemic change.
Wow. I can tell you're passionate for your topic, and I love bringing on passionate entrepreneurs onto the show. So great to have you here. And overall topic, we're going to be talking about intersectional leaders and really how that type of leadership has the ability and the potential to change the world. So I guess let's start with the basics here. So what are some of the traits that you feel an intersectional leader must have, and why is it important?
For me, it's important to start to define where our leadership, current leadership paradigms come from. Mm. And that is the leadership paradigm that we are all immersed and that we learn in at schools and from modeling, you know, from learning from others, actually is very influenced and informed by four major forces or belief system, that is patriarchy, white supremacy, consumerist capitalism, what I call greed somehow, fundamentalist religion. And the thing about the problem with that paradigm is that it reinforces structures and dynamics of power that are not only promote and sustain inequalities, but also actually hinder development, innovation, collaboration, and expansion in business. So I think that we need to challenge that paradigm. And the way we've been doing it, and a lot of people, there are many leaders that really see some of the flaws of this systemic, this leadership paradigm, and they're trying to challenge it. Mm-hmm. They focus on things like DEI programs, you know, like, okay, we're going to embrace diversity, we're going to try to build equality and things like that. So there is a little bit of the feminist, if you want, feminist influence there to bring equality for everybody. That's important, but it's not enough. Because to really change a system and to really change a paradigm like that, we need to, yes, to understand the dynamic of power that play in the system that reinforce inequality and oppression and discrimination. But we will not be able to change them if we don't understand at the same time how complex systems work and change. And that comes from understanding a little bit of complexity science theories, you know, understanding systems. We still think of organizations as in a linear way, you know, like we have the paradigm of Newton that explained the world as a big machine, like a clock. And so everything is the sum of the parts. And if you understand the part, you understand the whole, and everything is linear. And with more information and more instructions and more planning and more prediction and control, then you're going to be able to guarantee the outcomes. And we know that reality doesn't work that way, but we keep working with paradigm. As an intersectional leadership approach is a leadership approach that combines three main paradigms or ideologies or perspective. One is feminist perspective that really understand all kind of power dynamics and how they play in the, you know, day-to-day work or the business life. That's one paradigm. The other one is complexity science and systemic leadership skills that equip leaders to not only understand their organizations as a living organism, not as a machine, and to understand that as a living organism is constantly changing and evolving and adapting, and you have to adapt with them. And that means that you change your role from centralized power and direction and commanding and controlling to more of a facilitator and nurturer of a different kind of system and a different kind of systemic behavior. So we have the systemic feminist approach, we have the complexity science and systemic leadership approach, and then we have the neuroscience or mindset approach. Because also as an intersectional leader is one that share or has the traits of what I call an indomable mindset. Indomable is a Spanish word that loosely translates into impossible to domesticate. And what I mean by that is that it's a person, it's a leader that has done the inner work to first decolonize their mind from all the socializing and limiting beliefs that society has imposed on us, and therefore is capable of overpower, let's say, all the influence that the context, the past, other people, but also their own mind might have over them. And so puts leaders in a position of strategic thinking, kind of a stoic mindset somehow. That means that they have work on their thoughts and their emotions to be able to be their own govern somehow, right? So they're not that influenced. They're not reactive all the time to what's happening to them or around them. So when you combine these three elements, the right mindset, systemic leadership skills and perspective of the organization, and a clear understanding of the different power dynamics that play within the system, and they have the tools to manage that and to influence the direction in which the system is going, then we can talk about truly transformational systemic change.
Is there any examples, and this can be, you know, it could be with individuals you work with, projects or otherwise, or just things that, you know, common examples. Is there any examples of this type of leadership that you see working well, like, or some areas that you see it working well?
To be honest, I haven't seen one that a leader that has all these characteristics perfectly equally balanced, let's say. But many organizations that are very innovative. I mean, big organizations like Apple, for instance, a lot of the innovative leaders in different fields, especially in the tech field, but even the Army, for instance, the U.S. Army, they start implementing a complexity science approach to leadership, and they saw an increase in decentralized leadership and autonomy and decentralized power and way more efficiency and effectiveness in the results that they're getting just by changing the way they understand the structures and the way the system works. So that's an example of how Google is another example of this, to how to increase their level of autonomy, initiative, and innovation within an organization by decentralizing the authority and allowing the teams to really tap into the collective intelligence and creativity of the system to solve problems. So it happened in the tech sector, but also in the health sector in some ways, in the Army, as in the military sector, as I was telling you. Social movements, for instance, have been, even if they don't have the theory that clear, they have been tapping into the power of the system to self-organize itself. So these are characteristics of system thinking leadership that allows for growing and expansion and efficiency that we need to collect and to understand and to start implementing intentionally. And the same thing for many organizations that are more conscious of their environment or conscious of, you know, diversity, and they promote the liberation of people from all kinds of discrimination and oppression. And they have been using somehow also certain approach, let's say systemic leadership skills, in their process of getting people involved and collaborating and connecting and embracing diversity for innovation. So you see some examples of this kind of approaches in different kind of organizations that have worked perfectly well and actually are giving amazing results. What I'm doing, and this is based on 30 years of, you know, my doctorate program on communication for social change, plus all my expertise becoming an expert on complexity science and being a feminist for many years and working with social movements and in all different sectors in four continents. For 30 years, I've been studying all this, and I came to the conclusion that actually what we need now is to bring all these approaches that are having amazing results together in one leadership structure or leadership framework that combines all these qualities to get the best results we can get.
So I know you said you've been doing this work for quite some time and building obviously your base of knowledge and your methodology essentially throughout the years. That being said, like, where did all that start? Like, was it from you were a kid, or like, when did you get obsessed? I would argue, I don't know if obsessed is the right word or how, but like, what influence or how, or like, what got you on this path, like, in the beginning? Because it's interesting, because you've been building on this body of work for quite some time, and most people kind of don't, you know what I mean? I see it as, I know there's ups and downs and different zigs and zags, but nothing's linear, right? But like, what got you obsessed with this long enough to stick with it and build over the last 30 years? It's amazing. It's a great story.
Oh, thank you. Well, we might need another podcast for that, but I'm going to try. I grew up in the middle of the war in Nicaragua. So I grew up facing all kind of adversities. I imagine the war embargo and all those things.
Yeah.
But at this time was a period of hope and to understand the possibility, to really visualize the possibility of a different kind of society where everybody was equal. And the revolution at that time, the Sandinista revolution at that time, was promoting that vision of everybody's equal, everybody should have equal access and opportunities to be, you know, to develop their potential and be happiness and be happy and all that. The thing is that towards the end of the war, I noticed that even in a system that was utopian in theory, some people were more equal than others, you know? So
yeah,
the people
yeah.
that were less equal, I mean, everybody's equal, but some of them were more equal than the rest
sure.
of us.
Yeah.
And there was the ones that were less equals were women, people with disabilities, people, indigenous people, people from, you know, African descendants, people with young people, people from the queer community. So I realized that just that idea of everybody should be equal and can be equal cannot be brought about without really understanding the power of dynamics of the system and how it's constructed and what are the belief systems that sustain even that utopian thought, you know, or vision. So that's where I start developing all my, like, say, my feminist consciousness to understand those that level of power dynamics. But since then,
do you remember how, like, roughly, like, how old you were when you kind of had that realization, or if it was a progression? I'm just curious.
Oh, I easily between 12 and 13 years old.
Wow, that's such an awareness. That's what I mean. Like, that's a quite a bit of awareness at that age. I figured it was pretty young. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was young, but I was very active. I was, you know, super old since I was a kid, and you know, at school and in the student movement, and you know, in the social movement at that time. And I got involved with the women's movement since I was very young too. So I started a lot from. My mother was a great influence, but also other great women around me. And so I started working on, because of that experience, the revolutionary experience, I started working, and I've been working my whole life on social change issues and how to bring about social change and social justice. And I became really obsessed about trying to understand why humans behave the way we behave and how can we change it. So I went to law school. That was my undergrad degree, was law school, because I thought maybe law can explain the structure, you know, like the skeleton, and that will help me to understand the framework within humans interact. And that was good, but far from it. So I did my master's degree on communication for development, that based on an experience that was incredibly successful during, you know, the time that I was working for a nonprofit organization, we develop a communication strategy for social change that end up in textbooks and universities and the United Nations. I mean, people from all over the world came to us saying, like, how you did that, how was that successful? Top of this theory, I was at that time, and we look at each other, my colleagues and I, and we were like, theory? What's a theory? What are you talking about? What is that? We didn't have access to, we didn't have bookstore or libraries or internet or anything.
Yeah.
We were disconnected from the world, but we were doing an very impactful work.
Wow.
And so being always kind of a nerd, so I said, like, I volunteered to go back to college and understand what a theory is and, you know, come up with a theory that it will explain the impact that we had. During my master, I came across complexity science, and that was another aha moment for me. It was like, oh, social science, not enough to explain why humans would behave the way we behave at the collective level. But complexity science has a lot of theories that could explain in many ways and inform social change strategies and make it way more effective. So I became a scholar of complexity science and really passionate about it. I became, after I graduated from my doctoral program on that, I became a consultant and a teacher, you know, a professor and all that. But I realized that no matter how well you explain this, and people were like blowing their mind with this idea and this approach, was not enough if the leaders of the organizations that wanted to bring about this kind of change didn't change their mindset about everything, about themselves, about leadership, about social change, about their organization, about collective, about everything. So that's how I get my certifications on coaching, so I could collect enough knowledge to come up with my own coaching methodology for that purpose. And now I'm putting all the ingredients together to make this cake. And like all feminist, all my experience as an activist for many years in different kind of social movements, and my expertise as a complexity scientist, and all my experience as a mindset coach and leadership coach together in this framework that I call intersectional leadership.
Well, what an amazing cake and recipe. It sounds like you've been brewing up and working for the last, you know, X amount of years. So first off, I just want to say, Virginia, it has been great having you on the show today. I know we only touched on the depth of your knowledge here in many different sectors. That being said, I know there'll be some entrepreneurs and business owners and some other individuals that they're going to want to follow up. They're going to want to connect with you and your team. How do people follow your work? How do they connect?
Well, you can find me on every social media, but especially LinkedIn under Virginia Lacayo, which is my name, or look for massivechange.co is our website, and we're all on social media as well. So you can find everything that we're doing. And actually, I'm launching the first intersectional leadership immersive for women's leader in May. So this is the time to apply if you want to learn all about this framework.
Fantastic. And we'll put all that information, by the way, in the show notes for all the listeners. And speaking of the listeners, if this is your first time with Mission Matters and you haven't hit that subscribe button yet, hey, hit that subscribe button. This is a daily show. Each and every day, we're bringing you amazing stories and interviews and guests, and we don't want you to miss any of that programming. So again, each and every day we're putting out new content for you. So hit that subscribe button so you don't miss it. And if you've been listening to us for a long time and you haven't hit that write a review button on Apple Podcasts yet, hey, we sure do appreciate reviews. So make sure to get that review in us for as well, because again, we really do appreciate it. And Virginia, thank you so much time for making some time for us today and coming on the show.
Thank you, Adam. It was a pleasure to be here.